Hi, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, June 25th, 1996. In the fireside room this afternoon, our speaker is Marvin Cannonan. The session is entitled T.S. Eliot, One Lesser Poem. Let's listen in.
My name is Marvin Cannonan. The title of the course is T.S. Eliot, A Lesser Poem Called A Cooking Egg. Take one. Because I'm teaching, we need to open the word of prayer. So may we do that. Lord, we are gathered together to share one of the gifts you give us, the gift of knowledge, the gift of understanding, and perhaps even the gift of compassion. Lord, as literature helps us to understand the world around us in poem form and story form and movie form and music form, we are grateful. So we ask you to bless this time together, that we can grow, that we can laugh, that we can share and have the freedom in this wonderful field you've given us. We pray this in your name and we say, Amen. I pray with my eyes closed, but I could hear something. Anybody else?
I think when people come in with us, it's something to write online.
Pardon?
I mean, she should be here.
Oh, okay.
She thinks she's going to look on her pillow, but I don't think so.
If they come, would you just pass over? Okay.
You're the monitor.
Is there anybody here who remembers this poem?
Yeah.
I picked a good one.
I've never heard of this
one. We are going to read it through the first time. I begin slowly. Pippet sat upright in her chair, some distance from where I was sitting. Views of the Oxford colleges lay on the table with the knitting. Daguerreotypes and silhouettes, her grandfather and great aunts, supported on the mantelpiece an invitation to the dance. I shall not want honor in heaven, for I shall meet Sir Philip Sidney, and I will have a talk with Coronius and other heroes of that kidney. I shall not want capital in heaven, for I shall meet Sir Alfred Mond. We two shall lie together, lapped in 5% exchequer bond. I am nervous. This is fun. How does it nervous off you? I shall not want society in heaven. Lucertia Borgia shall be my bride. Her antidotes will be more amusing than Pippet's experience could provide. I shall not want Pippet in heaven. Madame Blavatsky will instruct me in the 7 sacred trances. Picarda La Donati will conduct me. And where is the penny world I bought? To eat with Pippet behind the screen, the red-eyed scavengers are creeping from Kentish Town and Golders Green. Where are the eagles and the trumpets? Buried beneath some snow-deep alps, over buttered scones and crumpets, weeping, weeping multitudes, dreep in 100 ABCs.
Why is it called a cooking egg?
First of all, we don't even know what it's talking about, do we?
No.
And so, will somebody please help explain this to me?
If you don't know it, we shouldn't be here. Is that what we learned this morning?
What class was that?
If we don't know it, we shouldn't be here. Yeah.
We already don't know.
Jody's.
Yeah. Truly, we'll probably get to my opinions later. But what is that?
I like his cat poems better.
Yeah. T.S. Eliot is of course quite dead. He won a Nobel Prize for literature, and I really, really think he deserved it because
which work?
Which
all
for all his works?
Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a general one.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. He won in 1948, so he even produced after then. He was born in 1888, died in 1965. When he came down, there was nobody like him. Okay. When he first spoke, the critics were baffled. Some of them loved it. Some of them said, you know, he's the new spokesman of the new generation. And here, 80 years later, he's still speaking for the new generation. He was a man way ahead of his time. And I picked this one because it's obscure. But we can, no pun intended, we can crack the saggy, you know? We can figure out what's going on here. It's broken down into three parts. Can you see my little dots in there? No, I typed it in. I was careful to type in his dots. And they are kind of the breaks. That's where you take the pause, the time. The first two verses, what are those?
Well, it's descriptive of a place.
Very descriptive of a place.
And who is Pippet?
That will turn out to be his wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's looking at her and watching her.
Yes.
And they are in Oxford.
Yes.
And all the stuff around her. There's her knitting on the table, and mm-hmm. there's the views of Oxford College on the table.
Pictures on
and there are pictures of her ancestors.
And an invitation to the dance.
That's a work by... Is that an Imitation of the Dance is a work?
Yes, painting. And it's hanging on the mantle.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have it hung. It's leaning right there on the mantle. I don't remember.
Degas painting.
One of the things that Eliot said is a lot of his poems are not poems, but they're observations. Mm-hmm. And so what he has painted for us in these first two verses is a wonderful little still life. Mm-hmm. Didn't it?
Get a good picture.
Yeah. And that's what's so wonderful about the poem. I am convinced, this is a personal bias, when we get to heaven, we're all going to speak in poetry. Because poetry can pack so much more in there so quickly. But he's going to have to expand our mind so we can understand it right away the first time through.
Poetry set to music. Okay.
Pardon?
Poetry set to music.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
That's what we sing on Sundays, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Sure. Sometimes.
You better take the hat off when you pray.
Okay, we open up with this little scene. How about the next four verses that come together?
Well, he's telling who's going to be in heaven. So he won't want honor. He's got all these other things to do.
Yeah.
He won't want capital. He won't want society because he can dance with Lucretia Borgia. Where are all these people? Oh,
no, yeah. First of all, it's not important, but B, we can figure it out pretty well here.
Herlanius?
And still tell you. Pardon?
Heaven's taken care of. Heaven's okay. I mean, everything's cool in heaven.
Yeah.
But why does he use these specific names to do this? There's something specific about the names. I mean, he's not
maybe. Well, I think some of these English people, we don't know anything.
They're more relevant to him than to us.
Yeah.
Oh, much so.
Probably means something to him.
What does the French say under a cooking aid?
Yeah.
Okay, does anybody read French?
That's very old French, I think.
That is. That's Villain, is that his name? In the 30th year of my life, when I drank up all my shame.
What? Really?
Yeah. In the 30th year of my age, when I drank up my shame. The poem was written in 1917. He was born in 1888. That means he's 29. So.
When I drank up all my what?
In my 30th year of my life, when I drank up all my shame.
There's what the names are.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I shall not want Pippet in heaven. For who is Madame Blavatsky
who struck me
in the seven sacred trances?
Party de do not.
What are the seven sacred trances?
They are the seven steps of. I gotta look at this one.
Is that that?
The softening.
That awful thing.
It's a the New Age movement. That's New Age movement back then. Thesophony is that was those steps in Thesophony that she was a co-founder of.
Oh, okay.
Isn't he being quite developmental structurally through this? When you look at the first part, which gives you, again, time, place, and setting, and he also has the two books, literature, and he has painting, which he has in there to kind of also give you setting. Then he leads from that an invitation to the dance, and in the second section, you have where he's speaking about honor, capital, society, and then his beloved wife.
Yeah.
So you have four things that we typically prize here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just seems to me that he's doing a wonderful leading of us down the path so that we have a chance to open into this expanding horizon, and then he's going to contract to close.
Yeah. there's probably a good word for this. He's sitting there and he looks out over and he sees Pipit. Okay, in the first two verses. What's he doing in the next four verses?
Thinking about death.
He's talking about life after death.
Yeah. He's what do you call this, daydreaming? Is that a good term? Mm-hmm. He's thinking what will be. Big transition. And then we wrap up with the next, I don't know if these are called three verses or 2.25 verses. Two verses and a line.
Oh, I get it. Okay. Where's the penny world I bought? You do it behind the screen.
It almost seems that when he says, but where is the petty world I bought, to eat with the pipit behind the screen, that's the denouement. It's just leading you now. That's the pivotal point. And then he winds down. At least that is for me. Because that is the here and the now. That's the very ordinary. That is what he's had all this time.
Yeah. My words would be that is the promise he bought into. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I will speak for the next several minutes and just let this run. Because if I were to do this, I would want to do this as a stage play. And I would want to do this in three acts. And this is many ways typical Eliot. He's sitting there and he looks at his wife. And the word sate, that's Old English for sat, you know, right? Or else she sat sated. She was just so comfortable with herself. And maybe she was beaming a little smile, just up and down in the chair. And as you look on the stage, there she sits, just totally upright in her chair. Some distance from where I was sitting. He is across the room. T.S. Eliot has been married a year and a half now when he wrote this poem. I suspect that's a major factor in this. Because all of a sudden, they're no longer sitting side by side with her book, his mind. She reads her Emily Dickinson, I'm my Robert Frost, remember those lines? Mm-hmm. There's now some distance from where I was sitting, views of Oxford College. And I think, oh, this is insult. This is a book without words. She has a picture book there. You know, what happened? 18 months ago when we were recording and she was so bright and witty, now she looks at picture books and lay on the table with her knitting. And he looks at her for the first time and he realizes who he has married. Right? And he looks and it's almost like he's horrified. Her books have no words. We're talking about you know, the poet here. This is, you don't dare call this autobiographical, but yes it is. He's sitting there and he's saying no words and her knitting. And then he looks up behind her and he sees the daguerreotypes and silhouettes. What are those? What those represent in the scene?
Photographs.
Very old photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And silhouettes.
That's what they used to do before
photographs. That's right. They would draw the silhouette, the black silhouette on the white paper. That's the way the family is remembered. And it tells you this about the setting. Oh, this is her house. Her family house, right? Her grandfather, her great aunts are there. And he realizes this isn't my stage, this is her stage. And there on the mantle is this picture, the invitation to the dance. And he's saying to himself, I don't want to dance this one. It's a pessimistic picture. Do you see it?
It doesn't have to be that way.
No, I don't. It does not have to be that way. And I'm going to tell you in the end, my interpretation is absolutely faulty because there are many interpretations. Mm-hmm. But I'm painting this great picture because none of you know the poem. That's not true. Everything I read, I interpret. And that gives me new depth. In the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, there was a great scene in there where the people who kept drawing the devil's monument, the flat dimension, saw the crevice and said it'll go around. But the guy who made the sculpture of it said, no, that crevice dead ends, because he had seen it from another perspective. The more perspectives we look at things, the better we understand. The longer we keep thinking about things, the greater our depth will be. And so I'm offering one perception we can build off of. And I have this really gray, dismal picture of a man who realizes, to his great shock, I am not happy. And it's got to be a heartfelt moment. And so he turns his focus, and if we're doing this on stage, this is where they hit the smoke would come across. And he'd stand up and he'd walk around and give a soliloquy to the audience that said these words, and keeps repeating these words, I shall not want, which comes from 23 Psalms. Except he kind of plays them his own way. I shall not want, I shall not want, I shall not want, I shall not want. The first one, I shall not want honor in heaven, for I shall meet Sir Philip Sidney. Sir Philip Sidney lived in the middle to the third quarter of the 1500s. He was considered the ideal gentleman. He was a soldier, he was a statesman, he was a poet. In his day, he was second only to Spencer. And then he died young in a war encounter. And the wonderful thing about him is, truly in his life, he never did anything except he was the perfect image of what a gentleman should be. And I will have a talk with say, I've worked so hard to pronounce these names. Thank you. Coriolanus. Who is whom?
Shakespeare's.
Shakespeare's who?
One of Shakespeare's plays.
No.
What happened in this play? Does anybody recall?
Oh, everybody kills everybody else. It's awful.
Basically, Coriolanus, he wanted to be the governor of a province. The government would not take it, so in rage, he rose up against the Roman government. He had an ally, and they basically marched into Rome and could have taken Rome. But his mother said to him, don't do it, son. And so he said, okay, Ma, I won't. So then his allies then killed him. And because he did not have the courage to continue his war, he perished. Okay? So he was a tragic figure. That's a real simplification what I just gave you, by the way. If you read the play, there's a lot more to it than that.
Sir Philip Sidney, by the way, has one of these grand English country estates that's been taken over by the National Trust down in Kent. And it's one of the tourist meccas of southern England, just like Blenheim is for the Churchill family estate.
Mm-hmm. If you want to see Coriolanus, it's one of those being played in Ashland this summer.
Oh, is it really?
Shakespeare in this.
What?
So
no kid.
Then the other heroes of that kidney, so he has a ideal gentleman, but with just an image, so a false, a facade of a gentleman, and then...
And one who didn't quite carry through.
And other people with that same kind of...
Well, we'll get to the other people as they come.
Anyway, and other heroes of that kidney, but other heroes have the same type of people.
Yeah, but and these are the people he views as his ideal society. He's sitting there
poking fun at him.
No.
He picks himself walking among the best in heaven. Yes.
He said, "But I shall not want honor in heaven." Well, they have.
Yeah, they have honor. He will be with them.
Well, yeah,
but what he's saying is they aren't though.
Yeah.
You said he.
No, I said they weren't.
He was the Renaissance man, but he really didn't do anything. And the guy in the play did not also do anything, so the honor is a shallow thing.
Yeah.
I shall not want honor in heaven. I'll meet with people of that kidney.
Okay, we're going to go on and run through these all first. I will not want capital in heaven, for I will meet with Sir Alfred Mond, who invented a process, I'm going to get this one wrong, for, not aluminum. He was an engineer who made a lot of money. And we too shall lie wrapped up in 5% government bonds, is what that's saying.
Money.
Money is not the problem. I will not want society in heaven. For Lucretia. Thank you.
That's another Shakespeare.
I know. Okay, who is she?
She murdered somebody.
Pardon me?
Famous Italian family.
Very famous.
Did she murder somebody? Was it Lucretia Borgia?
Poison.
Yeah.
She'll be my bride. Oh.
Yeah, she went through several husbands, so there's room for one more. And her antidotes will be more amusing than Pippet's experience could provide.
Ooh. And that makes sense, too, yeah. From the top of it.
Yeah, and I would really think, I would want to make that word experience or non-experience could provide.
Yeah, sure, she murdered without ruin the people, so she had lots of things to tell. Pippet sounds kind of boring. Dry compared to Lucretia Borgia.
And that's what he is sitting there thinking. Mm-hmm. He thinks, I deserve better than this. The verse 6, I shall not want Pippet in heaven. Oh, bless his heart, huh? Madame Blavatsky.
I don't know her.
Blavatsky. She's the one who started the Theosophy. It's based on Buddhism and Hinduism, and it looks at life and you're able to interpret it. I got a definition here if we need it, and I can tell I do.
It's started a new religion.
Truly a new religion. It's a special insight into divine nature or divine thought based largely on the Buddhist and the Hindu crowd. Insight is gained by ecstasy, intuition, and a special relationship with God or some supreme being to attain superhuman knowledge or physical processes.
Can you spell a word that you said?
Theosophy. Theo is in...
Theosophy.
Okay. What did I say?
He said Theo, it's a Theo.
Oh, sorry. It's, you know, Theo, God, Sophie, yes. Wisdom. There was no God, right?
It's just another... I don't think she invented it.
She's one of the co-founders. One of the two co-founders.
I think it's a general category. As pantheism is.
Yeah.
Tough group.
It's a tough group. No, and it's okay.
As the deists are, but I don't... But she may have... touted that particular approach to religion and faith.
And she did. And you will find, truly, they call her a co-founder in the Encyclopedia Britannica, which I even checked out this morning.
Come on, there's more than that.
Oh, sure.
Bacardi?
Yeah.
Who's he?
Bacardi.
She?
Yeah.
Donati.
Who is she?
Italian.
Yeah, but who is she? What's she do? Why is she
a musician?
No.
No, not in the 1800s. There were not women conductors.
And this is from Dante, so it's even before then.
Dante?
That's where she comes from.
Okay, you guys, it went Dante. I don't remember her.
Now, you know all this stuff, don't you? Pretty well versed. Okay. Okay. Well, she is. She's a. This is fun. The sister of Corso and Foresa, Forese, which is Dante's friend who he saw in Purgatory. This is his youngest sister, who, at a very young age, went into a convent. Okay. But her older brother Corso made her break her vow. He literally abducted her to marry somebody else. To form a political alliance. Shortly after she was married, she fell ill, she died. But her brothers in Purgatory, in Dante's Purgatory, speaks very well of her beauty, of her virtue. So what the author here is looking at is her gentleness and the sweet disposition that comes out in the heaven part when she speaks. Is somebody he would like to spend his time with, would choose her to conduct through the rest of life. Pardon?
To walk with.
And that kind of conduct.
Oh, walk.
Yeah. As Beatrice did earlier, Dante. He's sitting there and here's this dream. I want to be, and I want to have dinner with Thomas Jefferson. And I want to, and he's picking out the people. This is the society he wants. Act 2. Crashes back. Because if the first scene was the present, this scene, you could call it his future, you could call it his dream.
His escape, maybe.
His escape.
Fantasy.
Yeah. And then he comes back in reality, just absolutely smashes him in the beginning of verse 7. And scene 3 would go like this. Where is the, his word, the penny world I bought? Where is the promise that life gave me? When I married Pippin, what has happened? You know, I bought into this promise, the penny world, the penny candy world almost, to in courtship. Sneak, you know, he and Pippin sneaking behind the screen, stealing a kiss, the promise, the hope of courtship. When he was young and innocent and thought, this is what life is all about. This woman is my future. This is my promise. 18 months later, he looks at her across the table and says, she reads books without words.
He says, well, honey, the honeymoon is over.
That's right. And I think this is the moment in his heart when he discovers it.
Could this behind the screen be a platonic illusion? In other words, the life he's described in heaven, all the things that are real and full, yes, full-flowered there, are like the images on the screen, the flickering images on the screen that Plato talked about, the division from reality.
Yes, or almost like the invitation to the dance on the wall, is that projection, the whole image, that is definitely part of the image that Eliot's working hard to portray. But the you know, the sweetness to the dance is really falling apart.
I wish I knew what that picture looked like.
But
I can't remember.
If it's a
Degas,
the
ballet dancers. Ballet, but what's the invitation?
And I think it was
are there any art books in there?
Yeah, there are, and I did not find it. But I did not look fully hard enough, I can tell.
That is a painted picture?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. It is. I know I've seen it.
And in reality, in this reality where he's crashed back down, he sees the red eye scavengers are creeping from Kentish Town and Golders Green, towns just north of London, where they're at. And he sees reality coming in. He's now working in the bank. He sees the true process of life is devouring him. And his first dream is gone. The second one, he hangs on to a daydream. And the third, the fifth line in the section, where are the eagles and the crumpets? Is truly a reference all to the Roman armies. And I think he wants to stand up, raise his voice and say, you know, where the hell are my trumpets? Where did life go? What has happened to my conquest? He sits there in his wife's house, looking across the table.
Disenchanted.
Truly, truly, deeply disenchanted. Where is my victory? Where is my glory? Where is my honor?
And the answer is buried.
Beneath some snow deep elves. Oh, Hannibal, I didn't make it. And then it really, this is a Dolly painting, it melted off the screen, no time. Over buttered scones and crumpets, weeping, weeping multitudes, drooping 100 ABCs.
And are the ABC books like alphabet books? Or
nope.
What's the ABC?
Aerated Biscuit Company.
Oh.
How did you know that? How did you know that?
I don't get it.
Sorry.
And so today's generation, he looks around, and are no longer men of fortitude, are no longer Renaissance men, ideal soldiers. We're fat, old, soft, soggy, seeping, weeping multitudes. Here is my dream. I am one of the damp, soft multitudes. I am a soggy biscuit. A moment of his life. Revelation.
Okay. So why is it called a cooking egg?
Really? We'll get to that.
We'll get there?
Yeah. One of the things that one of the reasons why Elliot's so good and I am not is if it was me, if this had been my poem, and it's not. I don't write near that well. Here it is. I would have included a fourth verse on that. Would have gone something like this. Fourth scene to my play. Then rising from my seat, I would have cranked up the Victrola, and going to Pippet, would have asked her hand to dance. And as we whirled about the room, she in confusion, I would tell her I loved her, and I would. If that was my ending, I would put it on there, because I would have to have a happy ending.
Make up your own.
I did. Elliot is much stronger than that. He said,
this is why marriages don't last very long.
That's right.
You have anything to build on. You're wallowing in disenchantment instead of building a relationship.
Yep. Whereas I could not stand to end it that way.
So what does his wife think of this poem?
No, she didn't see it.
He always said she was a great critic of his stuff.
She would probably say, according to this poem, that she didn't understand it.
Yeah.
So what do we know?
Was he a manic depressive, like
no.
A lot of artists?
Now, what he, it's been explained that one of the things he did is he helped put a focus on the depression of the world, of the mass of the world, but he himself was not stuck there. And so he got to be a screen that they could play off of. And so they could read this. So Ernie the welder came home after work, you know, with his beer, looked across at his wife who was sitting across the table with her hair still in curlers, and could identify with this.
If he read poetry,
he would say, you know, instead of being out with Philip Sidney, he'd rather be out with Roger the bartender, you know. But it's all there.
Well,
go.
I just said, you said Ernie the welder, and I said his wife was thinking the same thing when she saw him come home, sit down in a chair, and take out a beer
and watch TV.
Is this supposed to be a moment in his life?
Yes.
See, it's just a moment. It's not, well, I mean, we all have moments.
Yes.
Where we think, how can this be? When you're so disappointed in your own life.
Yeah.
And part of it is disappointment in yourself. Why haven't I stayed strong and striven for more? And why haven't I, you know, why haven't I done all these things that I wanted to do? I had great dreams of being this or that or the other thing. And, you know, and we all have these moments. Mm-hmm. And he makes Pippet the focus of that first part when, you know, that's the choice he made. Why
yes.
did he make this choice if it was going to disappoint him? But it is just a moment.
If it
were his whole life, then, you know, it would, like, really bug me.
And it was not his whole life.
No, but it's not.
Yeah, and it's the moment where he could probably feel his heart and his chest go soft and think, oh, what have I done? Because probably 2 weeks later, Pippet was looking at him across the dinner table, and she thought, when did he become a slob when he ate? Huh? And she had her one.
I would have liked him better if he looked in the mirror and looked at his own bloodshot eyes and said, what have I lost, instead of laying it on her.
That's right.
No, that's a...
But don't you think we do that?
Misogynist.
Yeah,
but I think we do that.
I have another thought about this.
Go, please.
There's a poem by Keats about love that is so wonderful they don't ever want to intrude it on. And there's the sound of a trumpet that brings the world in, and they have to go about their business. It's a couple in love that they've just been married maybe a few weeks or months. And I don't know what that wasn't Lamia, I don't think, but it reminds, this one line is so, it just stands out. It just has to be more than Roman stuff to me, it does. I wonder if there's another image like the trumpet from a former poem about the same subject, love that goes ordinary. There might be another eagle image. If he's so full, of all this stuff that you've brought out that I never saw. I wonder if you could, you could bring something out of those eagles and trumpets a little bit more too. Show the interruption of love. It's the opposite of what he's doing.
Right.
He wishes he had some trumpet that could blow to joy and remind him that his state with this woman is way better than any reality out there.
But he, okay, I probably don't quite have this right. He has not yet come to the conclusion that he is happy. And so he wants to know why he cannot be a Caesar. In his imagination, in his mind, he sees himself as a Caesar. Because, you know, the book he reads has lots of words in it and not many pictures.
Do you think he was that grandiose about the whole thing?
At this moment, I think...
He's 29, midlife crisis.
Yeah.
The penny drill I bought, that isn't grandiose.
Not in that day and age.
All that, unless it is an image of the screaming.
No, yeah, and this is him screaming. You know, where's the love that I bought? Mm-hmm. This is it.
For a penny.
For a penny. Boy, I thought I had a good deal.
He wants it to be so wonderful that the interruption, you must know about this Keats poem before you understand what I'm trying to say. I can't help you with it because I don't remember the name of it, but I just remember the beauty. Oh, Ode on a Grecian Urn, isn't it? No, of course not. No. Anyway, read it sometime.
And at that moment, he's called off. And it goes...
Why the cooking egg? Okay. You're going to go into that. Okay.
Anybody ever hear what cooking egg is? We got to forgive him. He's 29, turning 30. He thinks he's getting old. What a cooking egg is an egg that's just a little bit too old to eat by itself as a fried egg. So what you do is you put it in your cake or your cooking, and it mixes in well.
Okay.
And so
it's not a fresh egg.
No, it's not a fresh egg. And what he's doing is saying, I am getting
old. Midlife crisis, yes.
That moment. And again, I remind you, he considers this an observation. Not a way of life. This is the bang. And I would like to think he got up and cranked up the control and put a record on and danced. Because he's probably been madly in love with his wife for 18 months. He'd come home after work, evening after evening, they'd sit there and they'd read their books, and he said, I always dreamed it would be this good. And all of a sudden, he sees it with another light.
Well, then he says, no, there's got to be more.
Yeah.
What you were just saying before reminded me very much of the musical Pippin. Have you guys ever seen that? Pippin's the son of Charlemagne, and he searches all over the world for the meat for true fulfillment in life, and he goes to war, and that's not fulfilling, and then he kills his father and becomes king and has power, and that's not fulfilling, so they bring the father back to life, and then he tries like all this wild sexual stuff, and that's not fulfilling, and he's so disappointed, he just, you know, and he falls down by the side of the road, and this young widow with a small boy picks him up and takes him home and makes him better, and they fall in love, and he's happy and content until he says, wait a minute, you know, there's got to be more than this. This can't be the best there is. There's got to be more. And so the narrator type person in the musical says, yep, I've got it. The greatest thing, no one will ever forget you. And he wants him to burn himself alive on stage. And he gets ready to do it, and then he says, no, I can't. And so the narrated person says, fine, we're taking away your costumes, we're taking away the sets, we're taking away the lights, we're taking everything away, and you're going to be left here naked. And that's it. And so they, like, take away this, and they take away that, and there he is on this bare stage, and in comes the woman and her child. And the last thing he sings, or one of the last things he sings is, if I'm never tied to anything, I'll never be free. And, you know, that this is it. Mm-hmm. That he's content with, you know. So that would be your last.
Personally, that's my kind of play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he goes through an awful lot before he gets there.
Oh, yeah. So,
but it's, you know, he has this kind of moment through the whole play. Oh, this is going to be it. I know this is going to be it. And then that's, you know, oh, no, it's, I don't like war. It's all bloody, you know.
Mm-hmm. Say hyper.
Yeah, he's very hyper. He sings rock music. It was the 1970s.
Elliot's the cooking egg. And they got the title wrong there, again, besides a cooking egg, not the cooking egg.
Mm.
Makes a difference. I am a cooking egg.
It's not rotten, though.
Nope, it is not rotten.
Okay. So the title isn't a cooking egg, it's called...
It's a cooking egg. On the board, it's the cooking egg.
Oh.
And I think we did that because we did that verbally.
Well, Martin thought it was the egg on the roof of the... Paul, you were going to talk about.
He didn't know. He was making that one up.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, these dots that you put in don't signify something.
No, no, that's their dots.
You couldn't.
No, I did not put them in.
Elliot, I mean.
Oh, Elliot did, yes.
Well,
the other he, the dead he.
At the end of the scene where it says, "Where are the eagles and the trumpets?" That to me is answered with "buried beneath some snow deep Alps." And over butter scones and crumpets, he's back up with his wife again, what they probably did for tea. And then he's depressed because weeping multitudes creeping under ABCs.
But the last three lines are all one sentence.
I know, but I think it almost goes back up to what kind of bit that company is that?
Where is
let's
that?
Let's see, aerated.
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 You know,
see, I write without my glasses on, so I can put a lot of notes in. Aerated Bread Company.
That's bread.
Bread, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the lighter bread. Yeah. It was a new product. The last two verses are here.
The last two?
Oh, there's more verses?
No, they're here. The one we just covered.
Put them up there.
Oh. We have followed the same pattern down, rhyme pattern. Let's see. A, B, C, B. See, the 2 and 4 always rhyme. 2 and 4 always rhyme. All the way down to this poem, as you follow that down.
Mm-hmm.
On the last one, because Elliot is a master, he just wants to stick you a little bit. All of a sudden, we got this rhyme, which is, you know...
Crumpets, crumpets, yeah.
Yeah, crumpets and crumpets. And none of this will carry. If we follow the pattern, we're missing a line here, and then this would be another verse. But he didn't do that. Why wouldn't he? Now, there's no true answer on this one, a definitive answer. Why would he have left one line hanging separate? That rhyme was the only rhyme down below.
I wonder if it would be, it's dysfunctional because that's the way he sees his reality at that point.
Dysfunctional, I would have called it more a moment of his surrender, which I'm sure is the same idea. He wraps it up and then the rhyme pattern falls apart. It itself gets over-buttered. It itself ends up weepy, soft, it droops. Physically, his poem does what he wants the words to do. To wilt it away. That nice touch? Does that make sense? This poem has, let's see, the word I, personal I, appears 9 times in it. Once in the first act, I'll call it, once in the third act, and the rest in his dream section. The I. There, if anybody cares, 193 words, 11 sentences, 2 questions. I think I've got to read the rest of these. 9 periods, 3 commas, 4 semicolons, 1 colon, 13 articles, 16 pronouns, and 24 prepositions. Boy, that's a lot of nonsense words to give that much meat that he gave us. But in about 190 words, he has painted a real moment of tragedy in life. And when he overcomes, well.
Why isn't the single line, where are all the eagles and the trumpets, why isn't that heaven? Eagles' wings and Gabriel's trumpet, and why isn't that heaven? Why? I mean, that's what I thought the very first time when I just read through it quickly, yeah. You know, the first time. Because he's talking about heaven. You know, and I do not, why doesn't that mean, well, where is heaven?
Because he's buried under snow-deep Alps.
Mm-hmm. It's because his heaven isn't the heaven that we imagine it. It is all these great people. So, I mean, I guess it would be heaven, but it's not, maybe our definition, it's not Gabriel, it's Sir Maud.
Yeah. It's an egotist's heaven. Mm-hmm. And the poem is dropped onto scavengers, and then the trumpets, and then the punchline, buried in the Alps. That too was the lost conquest. Hannibal came in with real promise and didn't make it.
Nope. Because of the snow in the Alps.
Because of the snow in the Alps got him. He came into light with real promise. He was going to marry Pippet. He was going to amount to somebody. And now he works in a bank, lives in Pippet's house. It's a picture of her grandfather on the wall.
The romance is gone.
The romance is gone. Isn't that a fun poem?
No.
Yes, it is.
It is.
I mean, it's fun, but it's depressing. It's reality. It's reality.
If it were life, it would be depressing, but if it's a moment.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. If it's a moment.
I also think when he sets that one line apart, I mean, to some extent visually, he's also living there. It can stand alone because it gives some space where there can be change that can be made. Mm-hmm. So that last whole section could be changed. So I see that as a way to invite the reader and also himself to say that perhaps that ending could be changed. So sure. That while again it's mm-hmm. at the moment, it does not have to be the all in all.
Yeah, it could
so
be.
I see yeah. that as very profound that he has space and time in there, or space.
She's, her way of looking at it is, he said, "Where are my dreams?" his answer. They have died. But, you know, I have scones and crumpets. Yeah. It's okay. I will let that pass. This kind of poem is really a screen, movie screen, to see your own shadows, your own projection. Mm-hmm. Read it over and you will find things in there. You also find people can pronounce these words better.
Well, I think it's fortunate that most of our spouses aren't T.S. Eliot, who has the magic with words and can put it down. Because I think any spouse would at one time or another have sadder feelings and have mm-hmm. fantasies. And in fact, I'm sure that happens. Mm-hmm. But they don't get it down.
No, see,
on reality, every married couple comes a day in their lives when the honeymoon does quit.
That's right.
Yeah, in reality.
And the strong ones pick it up and go on. The in his personal life, Eliot was married to Vivian for 18 years before she had to go into mental hospital for the remaining 14 years of her life. Then she died 10 years later, the last 10 years of his life, 8 years of his life, he was remarried, happily remarried. He liked being married.
Was this his first wife then?
Yeah.
Had a mental problem or something?
She does, yeah. There's a movie out called Tom and Viv that nobody ever watches, but it's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Tom and Viv?
Tom and Viv.
V-I-V,
yeah.
And it's them?
It's them.
Yeah, it's Thomas Elliot and his new wife.
Mm-hmm. Is it in video?
Yeah, because nobody went to see it at the theater. Somehow that didn't grab the critics' hearts, you know? Yeah. Tom and Viv. It's just fun to say it's movie land, but it's there's enough there that's worth getting some of this image to see what he was like.
Check it out.
Yep.
Any other questions on this? Any other comments? Anybody want to tell me I'm wrong?
Where did you dig up this obscure poem? Is it in the complete anthology?
Or? Yeah. Oh, yeah. It is. It's in his 1920 book of poems. Okay. And. The reason I like it so much is the title, The Cooking Egg. Because, you know, I just turned 50. What a coincidence!
Who are you?
I am Marvin Cannonan. I am married to one of the board members. Uh-huh. I teach freshmen how to use commas in college.
So you commas and commas, no wonder. Okay.
I do that stuff. I have my master's in English, in literature, English literature, and I've never taught the cooking egg before. And I wanted to come in here, and I wanted to teach it, and not bring in the punchline about the title until the very end, kind of like weaving it in as a short story almost as I taught it. And it did not come out clearly, but I'm going to listen to the tape and study the tape until I get this right. Because I also even included a little play in there, you know, the drama of three acts, or four acts, we call mine. Trying to absolutely overwhelm you with one drop of T.S. Eliot, because he's wonderful.
What other, if you wanted to just be your own devil's advocate, what other interpretation might you give this?
Again, his view of heaven is not that he will be so isolated and just be with the elite. He realized that life itself is not all that wonderful. The Sydney, Philip Sydney, you know, is that honor? Yeah. The Mond, is that, what good is the money? He's dead. You know.
Yeah, I kind of took those as being kind of already
tongue-in-cheek, maybe?
Yeah.
Tongue-in-cheek.
You know, he could have picked a better bride for heaven.
but it was kind of.
Yeah. And that's very valid. It'll give you a softer interpretation, but not quite as dramatic, so I went with a dramatic flair. I thank you for coming here. I have, by the way, because I am a very cruel person, if you guys want to go over another one, I have here the hippopotamus.
Oh, I like that one. And we have time.
No, we don't.
No.
Do we?
I do. I want to be sore until 5.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. I'll just...
Where do you teach?
Lutheran Bible Institute.
LBI?
That's in Toronto.
Where's that?
LBI. In Issaquah.
It's with Washington.
Lutheran Bible Institute. It's an accredited four-year college. It majors mainly in youth work, pre-SEM, ministries, especially overseas ministries, Christian education, and which one did I miss? But I get all freshmen, so I get them all. And I try to...
So you had Eric Thompson. Was it Eric or Paul Thompson?
I've not had Thompson there. When was he there?
Eric graduated from there, I think.
So he was there before they let me start to teach the freshmen.
When did you start?
I started teaching there in 92. I started teaching the English. They finally figured out who I was. I make crossword puzzles for a living, for those who don't know that.
So
I make crossword puzzles for a living.
Oh, that's right. You were sitting there the other day. Yeah. You know, and I mentioned that this was on PBS, on Channel 9. They had these... the thinkers of the day, philosophers during one of their money raising, and this one of them said about these, I suppose the universal mind or thoughts or whatever, that the crossword puzzles, if you do them in the evening, then you can take advantage of the thought processes that are floating around in
the people who've already
saw them. Already saw them. You saw that too. We're from Olympia.
Glorious accident.
Yes,
our pastor and his wife.
No, isn't that right?
Our pastor and wife, Mary Phil Rue, met at LBI and got married. Our retired pastors, Jeanette and Bob Lester, met at LBI and got married. So if you want to marry a pastor, LBI,
But they laugh, Lutheran Bridal Institute. They just did it. And it's so much fun to see it happen. It's a fun place to teach. Anyway, I've only been teaching the English now for about the last, I think, 3 years.
Okay.
On this.
He's been out longer than that.
Yeah. Okay. Go in peace. Serve the Lord.
Thanks
and we're
be
done.
God.